VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Game Podcast from The Times. Today, Romelu Lukaku, already showing he's worth every penny for Chelsea. Is Jurgen Klopp right? Will letting the game flow end up making it like wrestling? And is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's safety-first approach right for Manchester United? This is The Game. Thank you for joining us. I'm Hugh Wisencroft. With me today, The Times, Alison Rudd and Gregor Robertson. Guys, how are you?
Absolutely well, excellent, Hugh. Thank you.
good. And Alison, it is great to have you back because the listeners, by the way, I get told this all the time. Anyone that I mention that I do the game to, everyone loves you, Alison. So I have missed you and I'm happy to have you back. And I'm looking forward to some of your insights a little bit later on as well. We'll be joined by Henry Winter a little bit later too. He'll be talking about pretty much all the games across the weekend, as will we. But let's start with the match at the Emirates, because I think it was the big game for the weekend for most fans. Generally speaking, it was a very predictable result. Arsenal 0, Chelsea 2. No Ben White for Arsenal. He had a positive COVID test. We wish him well. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang was back from the bench. But the main story was all about Romelu Lukaku, who played for Chelsea for the first time in 9 years and 360 days. And it took him just 15 minutes at the Emirates to open the scoring. Alisson, he is the real deal. And he probably puts Chelsea ahead of Man City right now.
Right now, absolutely, yes. There was a lot of Lukaku on the media. He did a very eloquent interview that was broadcast on Sky before the game, and he does this thing where he manages to big himself up without seeming big-headed. It's quite a skill, I think. And he was saying how what he's learned in the interim from his first time at Chelsea, and now whilst reiterating his love for the club. So it had that feel of destiny and inevitability, which is nice. We do like a narrative. And one of the things he said he'd learned to love, because he didn't like hold up play, but he has learned to like it and be good at it. He's certainly built for it. So you'd hope he could learn to love it. And, you know, lo and behold, a few minutes after hearing him say, rather ominously, if you're Arsenal, oh, I'm quite good at hold-up play now. He just gives this sort of perfect exposition of how to do it. And Arsenal clearly didn't listen to the video play of him talking, because they seemed more shocked than they should have been that here was a striker in peak form showing how to bully a defence. And he gave Chelsea that focal point which they have been missing. It's, you know, Chelsea's goals come from all over the place, and they often look like they don't know who they should be trying to tee up. No point setting up Timo Werner because he'll be offside. So there was Lukaku muscling into a centre back, winning the ball because he was always going to win the ball. There's something about an aura of a striker who does that, a bit like Didier Drogba used to do it. I think Drogba used to win balls before he'd got on the pitch because opposition defenders were a bit scared of him. Laying off intelligently, his movement was fantastic. He looked like he was having fun. Significantly, Thomas Tuchel said, "I haven't told him too much. I've just said play a natural game. We all know what you can do." So there was a strangely relaxed element to it all, as well, as though he's been there for 18 months, not 18 minutes. So absolutely 10 out of 10 second debut. Yeah.
Gregor, what did you make of the match?
Of the match, I just thought it was a humbling afternoon for Arsenal. You know, everything Alisson said about Lukaku is true. He was, you know, just fitting seamlessly. And poor Pablo Mari. I mean, there are a few things that are really kind of humbling for a defender too. One is being pinned constantly by a centre forward. One is being shrugged off like a little boy by a centre forward. And one is your centre forward you're supposed to be marking, scoring a goal. And all three things happened to him within the space of 10 seconds for Lukaku's opener. So I felt quite sorry for the guy, to be honest. It was a tough afternoon for them, really was. And yeah, just kind of like underlined, you know, reaffirmed that the gulf between these sides is now a chasm. It's like Arsenal got so much work to do. Yes, they were missing Ben White, Gabriel, who's another centre half who's shown some promise.
Lacazette.
But I'm talking about kind of that's a kind of triangle, a base that you could say is Arsenal's first choice defensive kind of block, and they were all missing. So you've got to give them, you know, you've got to highlight that. But nevertheless, there's just such a huge gulf between these teams now. And Chelsea looked like they were in third gear. They were, you know, moving the ball from side to side, open up space. And as Alisson's saying, he's such a focal point, Lukaku, now, that he can occupy defenders. He's one of the best in the world at it, just occupying two centre-halves. They're terrified. Even Tierney kind of over-covering at times. I think partly that's to do with the fact that Pablo Mari is a centre-half, and partly to do with the fact that Lukaku draws defenders to him. So, yeah, a really humbling afternoon for Arsenal, but Chelsea are the real deal. Like we said that last week, I think now they've got Lukaku, they are level as favourites with City for the league.
There's a really good stat in the Times today. In what is their 118th campaign in England's top four tiers, Arsenal have opened a league season with two defeats and no goals for the first time in their history, which is phenomenal. You'd think that would have happened before, but I mean, there's nothing to cling to, is there? Even in the grand history of the club, they've never done worse. It's very peculiar. And I think what's significant, Gregor, is, I mean, you mentioned Ben White, but I mean, Ben White was there for the defeat to Brentford.
Indeed.
I don't think many people would think, if only the players missing had been there, it would have been any different.
That's true.
I mean, it's worth noting, and it's fair to note the fact they were not at full strength.
Yeah.
But there is a lack of all the things. There is a lack of all the things that Arteta said he was going to bring to the club when he came. So far, the Arteta experiment has failed.
You would say the same about Aubameyang. You know, Aubameyang was missing. But it's not the Aubameyang that we've seen, you know, at his best for a long time. So even, you know, even his absence, you don't look at that and think, oh, that's a huge blow for Arsenal. I certainly didn't. I still look at Arsenal every single week. Emile Smith Rowe and Saka, two guys who've come out of the academy, are their only shining lights. They're the only guys who are willing to take responsibility and try things and create something. And that's the same. Yeah, Odegaard's to come in. I also watched this game and thought, not only does Arsenal look mentally fragile, but they look physically weak. They looked like they could be shrugged off by Chelsea. And that's not something that really, historically, you would associate with Arsenal. Even, you know, all the great Arsenal teams had big, powerful guys patrolling midfield, two solid centre-halves. There is so much work for Arsenal to do, and so many issues.
For me, this is the first time under Mikel Arteta that I really like that. It's been falling apart for me in terms of his reputation for a long time. But I still thought he's a coach with ideas. Every time I saw them play, I just thought, look, they're not there yet. You can see he's got a plan. There's a process. I looked at this game against Chelsea and thought, there's no process. There's no plan. He doesn't know what he's doing. And it was embarrassing to watch on Match of the Day to those that saw it highlighted how many times the ball was just passed into Lukaku's feet. And it was like, did you not expect Lukaku to try and hold the ball up with the ball to his feet at any point in time? I mean, the thing that he does in every single match that he ever plays. What went on in terms of your preparation for this game?
No, that's a really good point, because you can't even say, it's a one-off and it's not fair that Arsenal were the first team to face Chelsea with Lukaku in it, and you know that they'll have highlighted all the problems that teams to come can learn from. They did. Arsenal did the same thing against Brentford. Everybody knew what Brentford were going to do. Even people who don't really know football knew that Brentford have a very, very high press, and they go for it, and they have high energy levels, and they were just going to zoom around, and they have a very effective long throw. And both those things undid Arsenal. And you think, well, if, you know, the man running the corner shop knows it, then why didn't Arteta know it? And then you think, well, presumably he did. He's clearly an intelligent guy. Is he not getting the backup from the coaching staff to devise means of handling what's going to come at them? Are they arrogant? Do they feel they shouldn't be reactive and worrying about the opposition? Really strange times, you know, to happen in successive matches, once against a promoted team and once against the champions of Europe, that to me proves there's something wrong in the application of preparation or the preparation itself.
I'd come back to what I said last week, that the question mark for me with Arteta is whether he's engaging the players. Yeah, a lot of times supporters or people listen to that will think it shouldn't matter. You shouldn't need a manager to motivate you to, you know, players to want to play for the, you know, they should want to play for the badge and the jersey and all that stuff. There's always an element of playing for the guy and, you know, having trust and faith in what he's doing. And I still think there's question marks about that personally. Because even when you look back to Arteta's first half season, he beat Liverpool, Chelsea and City with a solid base. You thought, you know, they were lacking something going forward, but they were organised. They looked like they had a shape and they had a plan and they were disciplined. And, you know, so that's not even there anymore. It's not looking great for them at the moment.
I mean, they did have the fourth best defence in the Premier League, I think, last season as well. So something certainly is different at the start of this year. I don't know if it's just players missing or what.
Everything about them is so perplexing. I mean, even when you do a bit of prep for the start of the season, you think, you look back and it's Arsenal, I think, collected the third most points after Christmas or New Year, and you think, how did that happen? How did they manage that? You know, playing the way they've been playing,
and still finishing eighth.
Yeah, it's just all very perplexing, Arsenal, and I think it's going to be for some time yet, to be honest.
Well, it's a slippery slope, isn't it? Because they're not in Europe, so you have to question who wants to join them. So everyone there knows the players joining them are, by definition, not that ambitious. So, and probably overpriced, because you have to pay a premium if you can't offer much. I mean, it's like, just think, where can this end? I mean, I don't see how they grow.
Strangely, even though they have brought on a lot of younger players, I actually think for the money they've spent, they probably could have got better young players than what they have got. I know that sounds quite harsh, but for me, Martin Ødegaard for 40 million euros is probably too much, given what he did when he was on loan there last year. I know they like him, they like his character, but that is money that could have been spent on either someone in their mid-20s who's probably more proven. You know, you look at Tammy Abraham, who went for less to Roma, probably would have been more had it been Arsenal from Chelsea, of course. But I still think they're, you know, given that they've spent more than anyone else in Europe during this window, I would have hoped that they would have collected more talents. And obviously, look, these are young guys. They could all turn out to be world beaters. Who knows? But, you know, you're hoping that the recruitment at Arsenal has jumped several steps if they're going to work out, because it hasn't in the last couple of seasons in terms of some of the money that they've spent.
And they need to win games now. I've said that last week as well. Like, this is great. They've got so many. You know, I think Lokonga's got promise. He looks like he could be a decent signing. Ben White, I'm sure he'll be a good player for them. Odegaard's a good player, young player. There's a lot of promise. There's a lot of kind of looking towards the future. The here and now is what will save Arteta's job. And, you know, I don't know if he thinks he's kind of that safe and he's only looking to building a kind of bright new future for Arsenal, then he's probably unwise.
Yeah, I heard Graeme Souness saying, these young players are all great, but it looks to me like they're not for this manager, they're for the next manager. Which is sort of ominous around Mikel Arteta's future. One thing that I did want to say on Chelsea and Romelu Lukaku, just to bring it back to him for a second, was what happens if he gets injured? Because I noticed Timo Werner was on the bench and I suddenly thought, I wonder what his future is at Chelsea. And I thought, is he going to be the understudy to Romelu Lukaku? Well, totally different players. I mean, he cannot do what Lukaku does. And we saw, as you've all mentioned, Lukaku is such a focal point in the attack as the way Chelsea might play from here on out. I don't really see where Werner fits in, but it also had me thinking, why would you sell Tammy Abraham, who probably would have been a more similar style, clearly a gulf in quality between him and Lukaku, but someone who is more of a target man than Timo Werner? Because, Gregor, you can answer this for me. What do you do if a player is so key, their style of play is so key, but they're the only player in the squad that can do what they do? What do you do when they're injured?
The thing I would say is that Chelsea under Tuchel have been so flexible, both within games and in terms of the way that they've played. And I would also say that Tammy Abraham, before Lukaku came, barely got a look in, so clearly he wasn't really in his plans. Chelsea are so flexible in that they can soak up pressure for large periods of games, they can dominate the ball, and they can play kind of blistering counter-attacks. Yes, Lukaku offers a focal point, but they've still got, as you say, Werner, Ziyech, Havertz can play through the middle. I know he didn't kind of convince that much last season on the occasions in which he did that, but they have plenty of options. And I just think that Tuchel is such an intelligent coach, and Chelsea can vary their play in so many ways that I'm not sure that's really going to be a major issue. I think Lukaku will play in all the biggest games. He'll play in the Premier League and he'll mix it up in various cup competitions. And Lukaku's injury record is superb as well. I think he's going to be there for, you know, barring anything, any major accident. He's a reliable performer. He's always out there. He's always ready to play and score goals. And he's, as I said, he's a guarantee.
And also Chelsea can revert to Jorginho's penalties, because that's what he was their top scorer last season from, and they were all penalties. So
I'm sure Lukaku's going to win quite a few as well. Alison, just finally on this, do you make Chelsea title favourites right now?
Yeah, and I think most people do. And I think that's annoying Chelsea fans, actually.
Oh, don't jinx it.
As it stands, yes. Yes, definitely.
Why do I feel like this conversation's happened in your household?
they were already good, Chelsea. I mean, you know, they did win the Champions League. And I love Tuchel's attitude, which is, if anyone mentions they're the champions of Europe, he just reminds them they finished fourth last season and have a lot of improvements to make. That's what you want from your manager, isn't it?
Exactly. Alison referenced his interview at the start before the game, and he was saying, you know, I think Jeffries was asking, how does Lukaku fit into this team of yours? And he's kind of, you know, took a moment to ponder, and he's like, I'm not sure. I'm not sure yet. I just told him, I've given him trust. You know, do you do what you do? And then as the weeks go by, we'll work on things and, you know, it'll come together. But he's already looked like he's building relationships with players and training and stuff. That's pretty refreshing, isn't it? It's kind of, you know, he knows he's signed a top striker. He's going to let him go and play for now.
All rosy at Stamford Bridge at the moment under Thomas Tuchel. And they got a big win at the Emirates Stadium against a London rival, so they should be feeling happy right now. But Manchester United, although they went away from home and they weren't beaten, if that's a positive, I think a lot of their fans were disappointed with a 1-1 draw away at Southampton. They did equal the record for the longest unbeaten run away from home in the Premier League, but it didn't really feel like a result to celebrate. One of the big things on this, Gregor, is that some of the United fans felt that the dugout was the difference, in that Manchester United under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer played Fred and Nemanja Matic in holding midfield as their pivot. They played Paul Pogba from the left-hand side after his four assists last week. Jadon Sancho and Rafael Varane, their big signings, were on the bench, of course. Did he make a mistake, Solskjaer, doing that?
The midfield will come to, but I think when you're looking at new players coming in like Sancho and Varane, I think there's an element that you've got to trust the manager to know what he's seen in training and, you know, what kind of fitness levels they have and stuff like that. I'd give it a few weeks yet until we can say, well, why is he not playing? But the midfield, this is not a new story, is it? Let's be honest, for Manchester United. And I don't know like where Donny van de Beek must think he is in this kind of, in the pecking order at this football club. Pogba was the most likely kind of creative spark. There was moments where he sat coolness and under pressure in the box. I think, you know, they skipped past someone to set up Greenwood and, you know, I think Pogba, although he's not, if you asked him, he probably wouldn't want to play from the left for Manchester United. He's proven quite effective there, certainly at the start of the season. Manchester United, they're not controlling midfield, and all top teams control midfield. nowadays, and I don't think they're going to control midfield with Fred and Matic. And you've got to give Southampton credit. The way they press, there's a good stat in James's report that they won the ball 14 times in the final third, which is the most under Hasenhüttl. Midfield is their biggest weakness, Manchester United. I'm not sure that that's, even when you look to the bench, as you pointed out, I'm not sure that the answers are there, to be honest.
Alison, does that mean that Manchester United can't win the title or probably won't win the title?
Well, we've already established that Chelsea will win the title. You can't have everybody winning the title here. You know, you have to remember what was said 3 minutes earlier and go with that for consistency.
What I really meant was, do you agree that that is the reason that they won't? Apologies.
Yeah, because it is really all that's wrong with them. I think when Cavani's fit, they look exciting. He's a bit of the impact of Lukaku, I think, and lifts the team as well. They got lucky with Cavani that he just seemed to improve the players around him and be a bit of a good role model for the young strikers around. I don't feel United are settled, and I feel they could settle into something more convincing. Felt a little bit pre-season-y with them, and I don't know exactly how it's all going to fit together. I mean, Jadon Sancho looked completely anonymous off the bench, but I wouldn't judge him on that because it's hard to come off the bench when you're new to a team. But I remain to be convinced just how influential he will be given how long they spent trying to capture him. So that's one that could come good or not. But my main problem, I had two problems with this game. One was, it made me think, why aren't we told the weight of teams like they do in rugby? So I have a feeling United might be the heaviest team in the Premier League. And I feel that works for them when they're in a bullying mode and works against them when they're faced with a team that are as positive and energetic as Southampton chose to be. I did think there was a shift. I thought, oh, United are now, they equalised. And I thought, well, they're now going to bully. They're going to throw their weight around. Although I don't know exactly what the weight was. But then they ended up looking leaden rather than bullying. So that was interesting. And the other thing I really want to happen is I want commentators to agree amongst themselves. They're going to call him Valentino Livramento because it's a wonderful, wonderful name and not Valentino. What a waste. Valentino Livramento. Call him the full thing. That's what his mother thought when she named him Valentino. She could see the rhythm of his name. And
he was excellent, wasn't he?
He was excellent, but I wanted him called his full title.
Gregor, when you played football, how much did the weight of players come into the conversation?
Well, when you played against like Akinfenwa or John Parkin or someone, it definitely came into the conversation in the lower leagues. But I agree that, you know, when you've got Matic kind of plodding around midfield and Fred sort of zipping around, and I don't see anything that's gonna kind of, as I say, control midfield for Manchester United there. And McTominay came off the bench. I spoke to him, I think he's growing in stature. But that's still Manchester United's biggest weakness. If they bring in Varane, big addition. Again, Martial, still not convincing. So there are issues, but the midfield's the biggest one for Manchester United. I think everyone knows that.
Hugh, you'll know this. Donny Osmond, what's going on there? Do the fans have a theory?
I'm trying to think of a pun for Donny and Marie. I can't quite do it so quickly. It boggles the mind. He's made a move. He's a highly rated younger player, and it's a bit of money that Manchester United have spent. It just doesn't seem like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer fancies him at all. And I actually think, I don't know. I don't know why he's there. Personally, I think they should use him as make weight for a deal for Haaland or a big striker that they can get in from somewhere else, and Anthony Martial probably as well. But that you just don't see him having a great future there. He must absolutely be hating life right now. You moved to Manchester United from the team that you grew up with, Ajax, which is a great club, of course, and it's meant to be a dream move to the Premier League, and it's been a nightmare. So you got a feel for him, and maybe by the end of this window, I mean, he should be loaned out somewhere, but at the minimum, at the least. But you know what it's like at the moment. No one wants to pay a decent loan fee, and no one wants to pay a decent salary, and I imagine he does have one. So very, very odd, and I don't know what's going on there, but maybe we'll get some more answers from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Some of the reaction from Manchester United fans was about a lack of sort of arrogance to go away to Southampton and play with a more attacking side, to go and play them off the park. It's almost like, I don't know, maybe that's just a bit sensationalist after winning last week and scoring so many goals. But do you need two holding midfielders away at Southampton? Maybe I'm being disrespectful, or those Manchester United fans that said that to me, maybe they're being disrespectful. But
Hugh, if you have two holding midfielders who are not very good, that gives you just one holding midfielder mathematically. So they were actually being quite aggressive.
Well, that means that they also played with 10 players, so, or a 10 and a half possibly. So, you know, why would you do that to yourself? It seems odd. Like, and also the other thing is, Gregor, you do say, like, how are you going to get control over the midfield? And I think, well, if you've got Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba in there, do you need this holding midfielder to be the one that controls the midfield when those two players should probably be enough to have to beat Southampton, certainly?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think that's their role in this team. If Fernandes is the man who's going to apply the kind of deadly finishing touch, he's got a bit of craft around the box. He was typically kind of menacing. You know, he nearly scored with a header towards the end. And as I say, Pogba, in a slightly more advanced role, he's been good there. It's just, you can't point out a kind of partner for him if he was to play in a two. And they're always going to, you're saying, why do they play two holding midfielders? He always has. He always will, I think, Solskjaer. And also, I think, you have to give some consideration to the opposition, who press very high and are their biggest kind of danger and threat when they're pressing in your own third. And so if you're a man light, then, you know, that makes it even more difficult for you. So as I say, I just don't see the answer in Manchester United's current squad. I think McTominay is going to play clearly far more games than Matic. Fred was much improved last season, but still, is that a good enough midfield? Again, a good enough base in midfield to control games, to challenge for the Premier League? I said last week no, and I stand by that, really.
We'll see what Manchester United have in store for the rest of the season. You know, I'm not going to judge any team so far on one or two results, but I know a lot of Manchester United fans see it as 2 points dropped. Up next, I'm going to speak to the chief football writer of The Times, Henry Winter. We'll also discuss WrestleMania in the Premier League. Let's call it that. Jurgen Klopp's view on the new rules allowing the game to flow. But remember, if you're enjoying the podcast, rate us, leave us a review, and also make sure you're subscribed to The Times and The Sunday Times right now. You can get yourself 1 month free. You can get more of our award-winning journalism on all of your devices. Remember, search thetimes.co.uk/the game.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, it's time once again on the Game Podcast to say hello to The Times chief football writer, Henry Winter. Henry, how are you?
I'm very good, Hugh. How are you? How's your lovely dog?
She is well. You may hear her yapping in the background. She's not too happy about the noises outside, but she is well. My little six-month-old toy poodle, although I'm the sole caretaker today, so I've got my hands full, but what can I say? Let's talk about Manchester United. We were just reflecting on it because of the soft centre that's been mentioned in the Times today, Nemanja Matic and Fred. Some of the fans just unhappy that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer even needs to play two holding midfielders and Paul Pogba on the left, given the riches in his squad. Does he need to be, you know, attack, 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 the Manchester United of old, and stop being pragmatic, particularly away at St. Mary's?
Well, I think we need a little balance here. I mean, you know, they brushed aside Leeds United the previous weekend. So some perspective. I was slightly disappointed and surprised he didn't start Jadon Sancho, who clearly looks fit. Otherwise, he wouldn't be on the bench. I'm not a huge Martial fan. I know Manchester United fans have a sort of lingering affection for him and the song and all that, and what do the press know? But I just think when you've got those other options up front, go with your best options. And I like Greenwood through the middle. And I also think, you know, you only got to look at Varane when he came on the pitch the other day, you know, just to be presented to the fans. I mean, he looked ready for action then. So I think, you know, let's start bedding in these players. I mean, I was at the Emirates yesterday and Tuchel didn't think twice about starting Romelu Lukaku. So, you know, the season doesn't start in a month's time. Manchester United have already dropped 2 points and they might not have done that if Varane and Sancho had started. Coming back to the sort of Times headline about the soft centre, I think it is the one issue going forward. I mean, people sometimes talk about the right back. I don't think Wan-Bissaka's that bad. And I think when you've got Varane in there, Wan-Bissaka's positioning and whatever will improve even more. So I think that, I mean, they didn't start with McTominay, and yeah, I think he was 100%. And I think he's huge in there because of his energy. And then, you know, if you've got Pogba there, you don't want Pogba to be covering back. So I don't have too much of a problem with a double pivot. I have more of a problem with Martial starting.
Let's move on then to the game at the Emirates, which you attended, of course, and wrote eloquently about in the Times. Firstly, on Romelu Lukaku's debut, it was exactly what we expected, I think, but it just shows how good Chelsea could be with him in the side.
I mean, so many other teams and coaches are going to watch that game and see how do we stop this supply to Romelu Lukaku, because he's going to dominate defences this season. And the only way to stop him is obviously to kill off the supply. Because if the ball gets to him, as he showed, look, Pablo Mari and Rob Holding are not particularly high-class Premier League defenders. He absolutely bullied them, and he'll do it to better defenders than them. So teams have got to cut off the supply to him, and Arsenal will just open through the middle with Okongo, and Xhaka was peeling off left to sort of sort out Mount and help out Tierney. And Kovacic in particular, I mean, it was very interesting. The first 5 minutes, even before Kovacic pinged the ball into Lukaku, which led to his goal, went out to James and then back into Lukaku, Jorginho and Kovacic have been just drilling these low balls into Lukaku's feet. He was pinning the centre half, Pablo Mari twice and Holding as well. And, you know, we just talked about Manchester United and a double pivot. I mean, you're almost going to need three in there to stop the ball getting to Lukaku through the middle. And then, of course, Chelsea will just go wide to James and Alonso or Chilwell and get the ball in to him as they did as well. So, look, he's you've got some of the greatest tactical minds in the country, coaches who will be looking at that. And Mikel Arteta was definitely found wanting. I mean, it's one thing if you set up a team and then it doesn't work, you've got to react. And Arteta didn't react.
I think that was the main takeaway for many people, maybe for the first time, although my Arsenal fans tell me I'm late to the party on this. I don't think Arsenal look particularly well coached at all. I think that's the big issue for Mikel Arteta's time in charge. How much do you think he's going to come under pressure in the coming weeks over his job?
Two things on Arteta in the very much that the debit, in the credit column, is first, he's won the FA Cup. Secondly, Arsenal's form since Christmas, latter half of last season, was good. Obviously, they were coming from a fairly low base. The third thing is, I think everyone can see what he's trying to do in terms of bringing in younger players. Maybe that's because he, as a young coach, finds it easier to mould younger players because they're not going to answer back like more experienced players. That might be a flaw in him as well. But you just look at that Arsenal squad and it's bloated. It's had different managers, Emery and Wenger before him, add to it. Sporting directors have been adding to it. Agents have been adding to it. It's a squad that needs surgery. It needs players out. Kolasinac for a start. Bellerin. So many of them. Elneny. I mean, and the crazy thing is, and Arteta's got to take some responsibility for this as well as Edu, is that a month ago they were trying to sell Granit Xhaka to Roma and now he's captain. I mean, that says everything about the sort of the problems with recruitment, the problems with the leadership in the dressing room, the lack of leaders. You give the captaincy to Kieran Tierney. I know he's got one or two injury problems, but he is a potential leader there. Now, also in which should really be in Arteta's favour, he does have players to come back. the camp has been hit by a late bout of early season COVID, and it has affected them certainly in three pretty important positions. Ramsdale will put more pressure on Leno. Ramsdale hasn't even sort of pulled on his gloves yet for Arsenal. He's getting battered by Arsenal fans. So I think I'm sort of slightly 50-50 on this, in that you've got to give Arteta a chance with this squad, with this team that he's trying to mould. But also the flip side, I completely understand the angry mob, as they're called, you know the press box at Arsenal, the angry mob, as they're called, who sit in front of us, who often spend a lot of the game turning around, sort of say, did you see that, rather than sort of focusing on the action. And I have some sympathy with them, but this is not simply about Arteta. He's got to respond better in games. I completely agree with that. But this is about the general drift at the club, which has been going on for a year. I know Conte has given him substantial funds, 120, 130 million for this season, which is good. But the leadership problem at Arsenal, I'm a stuck record on this one. It's been going on for ages under Conte. Talk to Arsenal fans and the terraces. Talk to Arsenal fans in the Diamond Club. Talk to some of the staff privately behind the scenes. And Arsenal, that culture that they had under David Dean, under the Hill Woods, going back in time, that has gone under Kroenke. And it's now affecting the dressing room. Too many people there in just about money. That wasn't the Arsenal way. So look, to sum up, there's a huge cultural problem at Arsenal, as well as issues with Arteta, as well as recruitment.
I know we spoke about Harry Kane previously, but I did want to just mention the fact that he returned against Wolves off the bench, and he was given, you know, a pretty rousing response from the Tottenham Hotspur fans. He's one of our own, etc., etc. I never expected to see him out there again. Is it now done? Is he just going to have to bite the bullet and he's staying at Tottenham Hotspur?
I think we'll get one more bid from Manchester City. I think they'll have looked at Lukaku. They'll have looked at, I know they won 5 at the weekend, and I know Pep would basically like to play a goalkeeper, an overlapping goalkeeper and 10 midfielders, but I think they do know they need a centre-forward. That was highlighted, ironically, against Tottenham Hotspur. So if they can get Kane clearly wants to go. I mean, I don't know the numbers at the moment, but if they're going to pay $100 million for Jack Grealish, I know there was a buyout clause, but Harry Kane, England captain, 28, probably got 2-3 more years at his very peak. Guaranteed trophies when he steps into a team of City's quality. I think they have to go to 150. So really, everyone's focusing on Kane, and obviously he hasn't handled it. He's handled it appallingly. Everyone accepts that. Everyone knows how Daniel Levy plays these things. And Daniel Levy has got to do what's best for Tottenham Hotspur. He has a player who is, you know, his best known player, if not his captain, who is, who's got 3 years left on his contract. He's coming out of a pandemic. He's got to fight for every penny and pound for Tottenham Hotspur. So, you know, he doesn't want to sell to an alleged rival. Obviously, City are a class above, and that's why Kane's going there. But Levy's got every right to fight for as much money as he has, just as Harry Kane has a right to be ambitious, to want to go to Manchester City. But this should have been sorted out weeks ago. You should have sat the three parties down in the room and said, let's sort this out. What figure are Manchester City prepared to go to, and how close is that to Daniel Levy's liking? If it's 140 million in the end, is Levy going to say no for that 10 million and maybe have a potentially disaffected player? The one thing, look, you know Harry Kane, I know Harry Kane, he is a professional. He will, you know, he hasn't handled this well, but once the decision is made, and if he does stay at Tottenham Hotspur, I think he'll knuckle down and he'll have a good season. But clearly, the key move this week is for Manchester City and how close they get to 150 million.
Yeah, we'll see what happens by the end of the transfer window. Could be a good summer in that regard, if you're into that sort of thing. Just before you go, Henry, I know you've got something to say about Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp's wrestling claim. You know, if you want the open game and these fouls, in his opinion, to be allowed and not be fouls, then you should probably be watching wrestling. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said it as well with Stephen's challenge on Bruno Fernandes. I mean, look, we've got to be consistent on this, and managers have got to be consistent. this time last season, they were all saying, oh, why is everything being called up? You know, it's encouraging diving, cheap fouls and whatever. It's a physical game. There's, you know, some element of robustness must be allowed. So Mike Riley, head of PGMO, sees the light, watches the European Championship, says, right, fair cop. You know, a lot of people have been saying we do need a little bit more of a sort of lighter touch. Let's only bring in VAR for clear and obvious. Let's not whistle for every time a player goes over, because we know what it's like when the wind gets above 10 miles an hour. There's certain players who go over. So let's a man's game is what Solskjaer called it. I mean, it's just let's have the modern game where you don't want dangerous tackles, but you also do want an element of robustness and physicalness and their physicality. And it is a contact sport. And let's have a balance. So I don't think that Klopp and Solskjaer did the game any particular favours with those comments, whether they were doing, as Lineker suggested in Klopp's case, to ensure stronger refereeing in a game to come. I don't know. But I think the fans enjoy it. And look, let's put things in perspective. In terms of, you know, not injuries, but in terms of things that have happened to people in the last 18 months, a player getting knocked over in a tackle and getting up again 10 seconds later is kind of minor. So let's have a little bit of perspective and let's have a little bit more intelligence and thought from, look, Klopp's a brilliant manager, Solskjaer's a good manager, but I have to say, a lot of people, understandably, were slightly disappointed with their sort of WrestleMania and rugby comments.
So, picking up on the wrestling theme, I think Henry Winter, if he was a wrestler, he'd be, what, Stephen Regal? I think is probably a fair enough assessment of who he might be. British Bulldog, maybe a bit of that as well. Listen, I think when you talk about Liverpool beating Burnley 2-0, it was another good performance from Jurgen Klopp's side. And it was interesting that he picked up on the challenges. There wasn't much else to talk about, really. The new directive, if you don't know, from the PGMOL, is that referees let the game flow. Some think it's gone too far. Jurgen Klopp was talking about a grey area. We need to go into the middle ground because we're not protecting players enough. And he thought the first directive was to protect players. We've gone too far the other way, in his opinion. Well, Henry says, you know, I think he needs to have a little bit more perspective, but the fans like it. What do you think, Alison?
Well, first of all, WrestleMania isn't real. It's choreographed. It's not real sport, and I don't think Klopp's complaint is real either. It's a game of marginal gains, and if you can put doubt in the referees' minds that big, lovely club like Liverpool are not being protected well enough, he might win the odd marginal free kick, which might win him an extra point, which might win him the title. It's a planned assault to protect and maybe gain an advantage. That's all it is, because there's no real evidence that Liverpool are suffering from this new directive. Tony Cascarino made a really good point in the Times that maybe Klopp's thinking about how when his midfielders had to go in and act as centre-halves, they struggled with the physicality of the game and were out-wrestled or out-muscled. And he felt that there was lack of protection then, and he just wants to make sure that his team don't suffer from an onslaught from clubs who need to use physicality because they don't have the expensive array of fine-tuned talent that Liverpool had. I find it hard to believe that Klopp is actually very, very cross about this. It's just, as I say, a means of just tweaking things to give him an edge. And I think it'll die down. And I don't think it's going to become a big talking point of the season at all.
He's not the only manager. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was the same. You know, he's another player who criticised, I think it was Jack Stevens' challenge on Bruno Fernandes, which led to Southampton's goal. Jurgen Klopp, Gregor, made particular reference to his two centre-backs as well. So maybe Alisson and Tony Cascarino have a point in that he said they were going up and Ashley Barnes and Chris Wood were buffering them in the air. They had absolutely no defence to it. And that was meant to come from the referee, and it didn't.
Yeah, I think this is nonsense. That's part of the game. And there's a line, as long as the line's not crossed, which I don't think Burnley do. I think there was another stat that Peter Walton said today, that Burnley have gone 95 games without a red card. Klopp might say that should have changed. But look, they do play on the line. That kind of, I've played against Centre Half, I've played against strikers who use their arms and elbows and it's not enjoyable. But I would actually suggest that Van Dijk and Matip are perfectly capable of handling that kind of competition and probably relish it. It's different to what you're used to in the rest of the Premier League games, really, when you face Burnley. And he's talking about protecting players, you know, from what? Where are these injuries? Did we see a reckless or a dangerous tackle this weekend? I can't think of one. And most injuries come from overworking players, which both of these managers have railed at in the past, and I'm fully in support of that. But more injuries come from that, you know, muscle injuries and whatnot, than a tackle or, I don't know, getting a cut nose or a broken nose. I don't know, a broken nose or something. Yeah, it's part of the game. And it's also part of what, you know, this has been said many times, but it's true. It's part of what makes English football and the Premier League in particular so popular around the world, a kind of bit of blood and thunder. We're miles away from that. Klopp saying we've gone back 15 years. I wish. A big part of me wishes that were true. It's not true. This is the problem. It's like you can link this to the conversation about VAR, because we thought after the first weekend, oh, you know, we've cracked it here. We've got, you know, things are sliding. The VAR seems to be working better. There were some more questionable decisions this weekend. And the Overton window kind of shifts. Once we've gone down a road, it's hard to kind of roll back. I think you look at some of these decisions now and with VAR and with tackles, and some fans, they've seen it for so long, and they go, well, that was a free kick or that was offside. Why is it not now? And it's going to take some time, I hope, for it to kind of settle down a little bit and everyone find what is a kind of a middle ground. We want to see tackles. We want to see combat. It's that simple. Football is a game of combat as well. It's kind of a physical game. And the Jack Stevens one, it was on the edge. It was could have been. You could give a foul. You could also say it's not a foul and that he kind of came across and got his leg in between the Bruno, who wasn't shielding the ball properly. He was looking for a foul and he came out with the ball. You could look at that both ways. There are challenges like that in football. So this is an absolute non-story, and I agree with Alison. It's like clearly they're trying to get in the heads and in the minds of referees with some fixtures, some forthcoming fixtures in mind.
Do we need to sort VAR, now you mention it, Gregor Robertson, a little bit more as well? I did, you know, it's a bugbear of mine now. I didn't realise I'd ever become this person, but here I am. You know, not wanting to overturn a decision versus letting the game flow, there doesn't seem to be any correlation, you know, at some points, that we've seen a big inconsistency already on big decisions for VAR. Some VAR officials just say, I'm not going to interrupt. And others have, and it has proven to be very inconsistent, in my opinion. You know, for me, Dele Alli this weekend, a lot of people say Stonewall penalty. I think, I mean, the goalkeeper stops.
It's a dive.
He doesn't take the player off his feet. It's a dive. He, in fact,
it's a modern day dive.
Yeah, he initiates the contact with the goalkeeper. Actually, never got as far as reaching him. But we've seen Newcastle, in particular, Steve Bruce unhappy week one versus week two in terms of penalties that were given for and against his team. You know, Jacob Murphy got his foot to the ball in the first week, but the penalties that were given against Newcastle this weekend, he was pretty unhappy with. I thought Jamal Lascelles definitely was a handball, but you can understand why he's confused. You know, you're just not seeing, in my opinion, consistency from the VARs who don't know. We've said let the game flow. They don't know when they're meant to now interrupt.
But I think the reason we're not seeing consistency is because these are more examples of decisions that could go either way. We said this for the last 2 years, really. All VAR has done is kind of added another layer of opportunity to say, he got that wrong, when there are people who would say, no, that was right. So, you know, it's got to be just for the glaring decisions, really. And I think, I personally am in favour of this. I think if there's any doubt.
The glaring decisions, they're not picking up on because they don't want to get involved with the game. They don't want to overturn the referees.
What's
decision.
The glaring decision?
They've made it like the Euros. They've said at the start, the Euros was great. The VAR barely, interrupted
but
the game.
What has been a glaring decision?
Well, Jacob Murphy, for one, glaringly not a penalty in the first week for Newcastle United. He gets his foot on the ball. You didn't even see a replay of it. They just gave the penalty and he scored it. It was like, what's the VAR for? That, for me, was a glaring error. You can say Dele Alli's wasn't, because the goalkeeper did come out, and ultimately, had Dele Alli continued to try and run, he probably would have clattered into the goalkeeper. The fact that his legs mysteriously lost all sense of ability to move and just became like a bit of a puppet basically and dangled into the goalkeeper. Yeah, fair enough. But he probably would have got a penalty there anyway. That maybe not. But for example, Pablo Mari's challenge on Lukaku from behind, in my opinion, wasn't a slide tackle from behind a red card about 20 years ago. Have they changed the rules on that?
He barely touched him.
He slid in on him from behind. It doesn't matter if he barely touched him. It's been Gregor.
This is a problem. Football will always have these disagreements. So all we're doing is giving them an opportunity to make people disagree and kind of with more focus and attention and, you know, more replays. And yeah, that's all we're doing. I agree with you, the Jacob Murphy. That's the only decision so far that I think was a howler.
It was a typical week one new system decision as well, wasn't it? That people are grappling with what they are supposed to now be doing. And also we are making the same mistake again, which was we are assuming that VAR is somehow magic. It's not. It's just another referee. And for as long as it's just another referee, it will be inconsistent because there are some people better at VAR than others.
And you're better than getting involved less frequently. And that's what's happening. So I think that's better.
I think you're better off not having it if it's VAR light. There's no real point. Like, because as you're saying, the referees on the pitch make decisions. They're only human. VAR is just another official. I don't understand the point in having two people who don't know what they're doing instead of one. I mean, what's the point? I don't actually understand it. You guys can clarify for me, but I'm not sure there's any point in, as I say, VAR light. Either it's, you know, tries its best to create black and white decisions, or it doesn't get involved at all. In that case, don't have it. Anyway, I'm going to move on because I'm sure we're going to be talking about that throughout the season, as we did last season.
Not.
It's depressing. It is absolutely, it's depressing. But if the managers are, then we are. Let's just review, as we are probably going to do throughout the season, what else happened across the weekend before we end the podcast in the other games. Gregor, I'm going to start with you. Aston Villa 2, Newcastle 0. Composed performance.
Yeah, and it was all about Danny Ings' kind of acrobatic finish and the spotlight that was shone on Austin McPhee, the set-piece coach, although, you know, when you look at it, you think, oh, there wasn't that much mystery in that set-piece, a long throw hurled into the box, a flick on, and a fine finish. You must give him credit. It was a superb finish. So, yes, it was a massive step forward for Villa after disappointing open day at Watford. And Newcastle, you know, I have some sympathy for Bruce. After that conversation, you got to see Callum Wilson missed a sitter at the start and he won a penalty that was called off for a very marginal looking offside again. So you have to, I do have some sympathy for Bruce. But yes, Villa, I think as I said before, when Watkins comes back as well, Villa's front line is looking really dangerous this year, and Danny Ings is pretty close to a guaranteed Premier League goals if he's fit as well, and he's managed to stay fit a lot more since he's kind of missed a huge amount of football at Liverpool. He's going to prove to be an excellent signing, I think, for Villa.
Alisson, Patrick Vieira at Crystal Palace, no goals again against Brentford this time around, rather than Chelsea. Any criticisms for them?
It's about context, isn't it? I mean, there were different sorts of nils in this game. Brentford's nil was well organised, promising, even admirable, I would say. But Palace's nil was disappointing and where are the goals going to come from sort of nil. So you've got to say, given that Palace were at home with their lovely ultras, this is a nil-nil that Brentford will feel they won, if such a thing is possible.
Yeah, I've got to say, David Raya in the goal for Brentford had a very good game as well. It could have been a different story for Palace on another week. Elland Road, full house in the Premier League for the first time in about, 17 years. Great game, 2-2 draw with Everton.
Humdinger, wasn't it? Look, some of the scenes when Leeds equalised through Clich were brilliant. That kind of cathartic, semi-aggressive roar you get at Leeds. It's like, you know, people standing on the hoardings really giving it some. You thought, yes, it's good to see Leeds, you know, back in the Premier League and their fans able to enjoy it. So it was a cracking game. As we previewed last week, you know, two teams, kind of traditional old fixture, and Rafinha's equaliser was a fine strike. I think he's got one of the best left foots in the Premier League, fine player. And Damari Gray's, you know, had a really promising start to his Everton career. Drifted, you know, I saw him break out at Birmingham many years ago, and drifting a bit of Leicester. Still only 25. I think he could prove to be, if he can find a bit of consistency in his play, could prove to be a really good signer for Everton.
And of course, Bielsa still not speaking English and still sitting on a bucket. These are things I was looking out for.
I missed his interpreter, I've got to say. It made me feel, you know, all warm and fuzzy inside when I saw him back. He's one of the great figures in world football now, believe me. Alisson, Etihad Stadium, City 5, Norwich 0. It could only really go that way.
Although Man City have actually just cemented their reputation as the team all fantasy football addicts ignore, because it is impossible. It's impossible to predict who their lineup will be and who will score the goals. So I don't know anyone who plays fantasy football who picks any City players whatsoever. Jesus was outstanding, but you know, Jesus is outstanding and he'll be dropped for the game against Arsenal. I mean, that's probably all you can conclude from that game. And sometimes I just think, oh my goodness, Pep just gets bored and he creates puzzles for himself. You know, like people who make up their own Sudoku because there's nothing to do on the train. And that's what he does with his team. It's strange. And I'm really disappointed with Norwich. I do feel their model is they don't sack you if you go down. So, you know, what's the point? I don't know.
Oh, come on.
Is that unfair? Was that unfair, Gregor?
A lot of people this season as well already railing against Norwich for not spending money, and they spent over 50 million quid this time. So I think, like, Daniel Farke's a brilliant manager. He's won two promotions. He's had lived through a kind of period of financial strain, and the club was going through a restructuring and invested in youth and an academy, and he still managed to succeed with them. Yes, the first time they looked like they were going to be miles off it. This time, I think they'll be a bit closer. And they've played Liverpool and Manchester City in the first two games. I think we'll still to see the real Norwich.
With a high line. What's the point of that?
He did say he was disappointed they conceded the same goal four times. So,
there was some seriously bad defending when Gibson kind of just ran out to close down no one in particular, left a big hole constantly. Jesus, I think, or Marius running in from the right wing inside the fullback. Yeah, there was some bad defending. These are individual mistakes, personally, I think, more than a fault in the system.
No, and I do need to thank Ben Gibson as well, because that allowed someone in my fantasy team, Riyad Mahrez, to get a goal. So, Alisson, there you go. Some of us do pick Manchester City players. And also, this game included the comment of the weekend. You mentioned Gabriel Jesus' performance, but I just thought Pep saying his mum and dad must really love him, because he can play striker outside on the wing as well. He can play midfield. I thought that's where your parents really love you. If you're a utility player, the more positions you can play, the more love you get from your parents. So Pep, thank you very much. Add that to Aguero's tears. Gregor, Brighton 2, Watford 0. Another fancy football theme. I had Shane Duffy on the bench, 14 points. Can't believe it.
Well, Shane Duffy's kind of re-emergence has been magnificent for Brighton this season. What a header. You know, he's a warrior. He had a really, really painful time on loan at Celtic last season. He's a Celtic fan, and he went when they lost the opportunity to win 10 in a row, and he didn't have a good time either. And obviously sold Ben White. He's come back into the team. You're not sure if he's going to, you know, play in a back three of Brighton or be able to kind of build play from the back, and he's so far played brilliant, and Brighton fans still love him. So he was absolutely the main man, along with Bissouma, who just constantly, you know, continually impresses. And Watford, it could have been more, I think, for Brighton. Conley had a chance to make it third. They were, you know, architects their own downfall a bit in the way that they tried to build out. And Cleverley was snaffled in the edge of the box. Gift for Mopai. So, yeah, Watford had a bright start, but that was a pretty dispiriting day for them, I think.
Graham Potter did say the most obvious thing ever. He said, we've been working on our finishing in front of goal. Yeah, I mean, if you hadn't have been doing that, it would have been negligence, gross negligence. But if they do keep scoring, this for me is a top half team.
Well, where are they going to keep scoring? That's the thing. I mean, it's the same team. That's the thing as well. You're looking, they've said Mwepu, £20 million midfielder, came on from RB Salzburg, but really it's the same team otherwise, and minus Ben White. Yeah, great if they've been working on a finish. I think they probably did that last season too in training, and it didn't really work. So, you know, time will tell. I think if Tom was here, he'd say, let's not get carried away.
Alisson, finally, Molyneux, Wolves 0, Spurs 1. another 1-0 win for Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah, I think Wolves are hoping to set a record for the number of shots without scoring for the whole season. They summoned 25 in this one and they enjoyed more possession. So I think the tide will turn surely. As bad starts to the season go, I think Wolves isn't so awful because of those stats. Although I can't get used to seeing Jimenez playing. It makes me very uncomfortable. I feel like I need to talk to his doctors. I don't get it. I did predict he would never play again, sadly. I don't think he should be playing. I don't see how you can fracture your skull and then be as effective a centre forward.
Just remind us where you got your
PhD. I know, yeah. I think we should trust the doctors here, Alison.
Your PhD in...
I think we should trust the doctors here, no?
No, well, obviously they've done some medical stuff. I expect he's had an MRI scan. But it's still, I can't believe I'm the only person who winces when the ball comes anywhere near him. It's counterintuitive to me. It really is that it can be okay. I'm not slagging off the medical department. I don't want a writ. I'm just saying I feel uncomfortable and I would like some reassurance from the medical department why he's there.
And, in the age of questioning the medical experts, the game podcast delivers on that front as well. So, Alison, thank you very much. Go ahead. What were you saying?
No, I was going to say the other notable thing from this match was that Dele Alli seems to be bouncing again, and it's always good when Dele Alli is bouncing. We didn't like him when he was sad and misunderstood and sidelined. And the best chant of the weekend was probably directed at Harry Kane, in that they sang "He'll be a Mank in the morning," which just scans beautifully and is politically astute and amusing and needling.
Yeah, Harry Kane was back. We'll see how long he lasts in a Tottenham shirt. Dele Alli, we'll see how long this form lasts as well. As a number eight, and do you know what the funny thing was, though? The only funny thing about Dele Alli's performance was that, unbelievably, after one good game, an England return was mentioned on the telly, which we cannot help but do anytime an England player plays well, or a player eligible for England plays well. He'll be back in Gareth Southgate's thoughts if he keeps playing like this after a good 90 minutes. So there you go, you know, bit between his teeth, etc., etc. Alison Rudd, Gregor Robertson, thank you for being with me on the Game Podcast this week. We'll be back on Thursday. Plenty to look ahead to. Arsenal fans, I'm sure you want to listen as well. Man City up next. But thank you for listening. As I say, we'll be back with you on Thursday. All you've got to do in the meantime is make sure you're subscribed to The Times and The Sunday Times. Go online, check it out, thetimes.co.uk/thegame. We'll see you soon.
And a shout out to Valentino Livramento.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.